Hi there, folks. It's Bikescape number, oh my God, it's Bikescape number 40, and it's January 8th, 2006.
Day began with a rainbow in the sand as I cycled into Kerry. Cattle grazing on a steep hillside looked well fed, well balanced, close to the edge. Pedal on, pedal on, pedal on for miles, pedal on. Pedal on, pedal on, pedal on for miles, pedal on. I take a break, I close my eyes, and I'm as happy as the dolphin in a quiet spot, talking to myself, talking about the rain, talking about the rain. Whenever I'm alone, I tend to brood. But when I'm out on my bike, it's a different mood. I leave my brain at home, get up on the saddle. No hanging around, I don't diddle daddle. I work my legs, I pump my thighs, taking the scenery, passing me by. The Kerry Mountains or the Wicklow Hills, the antidote to my emotional ills. Emotion built upon human toil, nuclear free, needs no oil. But it makes me hot, makes me hard. I never thought I could have come this far. Through miles of mountains, valleys, streams, this is the right stuff filling my dreams. So come on, get up on your bike and go on. Get up on your bike and pedal on, pedal on, pedal on for miles, pedal on. Pedal on, pedal on, pedal on for miles, pedal on. Finally, with my face to that bitter wind, I bombed it into Killarney. Skin raw like a sushi dinner, an appetite that would eat the hind leg of the Lamb of God. Even though, you know, I wouldn't dream of doing such a thing. I'll settle down for a quiet night, think about what I've been seeing at dawn and wonder. There's a reason for this. Now is the time to speak of the problem, the trouble of mine. Sick of the traffic, choking the towns, freaking me out, bringing me down. Knock down houses, build more lanes. Once was a problem, but now it's insane. My solution, it's one that I like. It's muddy. The acoustic motorbike. So come on, get up on your bike. I go on. Get up on your bike. Cycled into Kerry. Cattle grazing on a steep hillside looked well fed, well balanced, close to the edge. Pedal on, pedal on, pedal on for miles, pedal on. Pedal on, pedal on, pedal on for miles, pedal on. I go on. I go on. Get up on your bike. Get up on your bike.
Well, hello there, Bikescapers. It's nice to be on the air again, so to speak. Things are a little slow in the winter time, you know. It's not cold and rainy. It's not cold and snowy here in San Francisco, but it rains and it's, you know, not much happening. So, filling up the time with lots of interviews with movers and shakers and stuff like that. So, a while back we talked to Tom Radulovich from Transportation for Livable Cities, and today we are going to talk to Dave Snyder. And Dave is quite a personality here in San Francisco bike politics and bike culture. He was the founding executive director of the present incarnation, he'll explain during the interview, of the San Francisco Bicycle Coalition. He was there from 1991 till 2002, and he brought it to almost to what it is now. And then he was the founding executive director of Transportation for Livable Cities, which was the group that now headed by Tom Radulovich that we interviewed recently. He's the president of the board there, and he's also the treasurer of the city council of the Green Party, the San Francisco Green Party here, so, which is actually a pretty prestigious party in San Francisco. We actually have a few people, quite a few elected officials on the school board, and we have one person on the board of supervisors from the Green Party. So it's it ain't nothing. It's not like it ain't nothing. And he's also he serves as the chair of the Transportation Committee for the San Francisco Planning and Urban Research Organization, SPUR. So quite a guy. And here's the interview. We went down to a coffee house in the Mission and talked for a while. And the recording came out just awful. Just discovered a new program called SoundSoap, and I cleaned it up. It sounds a little on the digital side, but it's understandable and pretty listenable now. But here you go. Okay, so we're sitting here in the Mission with Dave Snyder in this coffee house, very San Francisco kind of place here. And Dave is an old paisano of mine from Washington, D.C., grew up in the same town as I did. What made you come out here, Dave?
I wanted to come to the most progressive big city in the country. I heard a speech by Harry Britt that was an amazing speech.
You heard him when you were back in Washington?
I heard him at a conference in Wisconsin. I went to a fundraisers conference in Waukesha, Wisconsin, and he was the keynote speaker. At the time, he was president of the Board of Supervisors in San Francisco, which meant he got the most votes of anyone in the city for our city council.
So that was about 1985 or so?
No, that would have been 89.
Okay.
88. And he talked about what it meant to be a progressive, and he said how the word progressive is a pretty silly term. It sounds like we stand for progress, but the point is what kind of progress. And we're really radicals is what we really are, because we want to change the system at its root. And he goes on and on to talk about the difference between being a liberal and a radical, and why radical politics is what's really going to save our society and globe. I couldn't believe this man was talking, an out gay man talking like this, got the most votes of anyone else in an American city. I wanted to go there and be with those people. So that was one of the reasons I moved to San Francisco.
And were you riding a bike then?
Not a little bit, yeah.
What got you into the whole San Francisco bike culture? Was there one at that time?
That's a good story. It was 1990, Earth Day, and a bunch of anarchists whose organizing style I really respected put on an Earth Day bicycle parade. They originally wanted to block the Bay Bridge for Earth Day to make a very important point. And in reaching out to community members, they realized that there wasn't that much support among the activists for that idea. But there was support for a sort of sweeter bicycle parade kind of thing. It was kind of like a precursor to critical mass, actually. There was even a cop that came on their ride, a bicycle cop, just to in a very friendly way. And we at the time, I was involved in Central American activism. I already decided to be an activist. It was going to be my career, whatever that meant. With regard to Central American activism, I was feeling not very powerful or important in the movement. The people that I was supposedly helping in Nicaragua, I had no idea what I was doing. How could I know if I was really helping them? Because it wasn't my own community. And as a middle class white guy, I can't really lobby for middle class white. You can't really lobby for my people. My people are the most privileged on the planet, practically. It was when we did this Earth Day bicycle parade with these really cool people who knew how to organize, that I realized, oh my gosh, I can be a bicycle activist. And in that way, help my people in a very kind of empowering, selfish way, but in a very important way in the world, help Americans use fewer resources around the globe and not have to exploit the wazoo of everyone around the globe for our own consumption. And, you know, that's the most important thing Americans can do, I think. If they want to help the starving kids in India, become a vegetarian. Stop using so much oil, you know. Get our own house in order, basically, is the most important thing Americans can do. And so that's what I decided to do, yeah. So I decided at the time, I said, hey, I'm going to do bicycle organizing, and just kind of jumped right in.
And you worked on a really local scale rather than a big international scale, I guess, at the time.
Absolutely, yeah. Totally, yeah.
And was there was a bike coalition at that time, but what was it?
The bike coalition was founded in 71. At that time, in 89, 90, it was kind of defunct. One fellow named Daryl Scrubach was the executive director, and he was the sole member, and did a fantastic job keeping the organization's P.O. box bills paid and answering the letters now and then and keeping the organization up. But he was not an organizer who didn't want to be. He was just holding it. And when I asked him if I could publish a newsletter, I asked him if I could publish it in the name of the Bicycle Coalition so that it would have some organization behind it. He said, sure, go right ahead. And so that was the beginning of the Bike Coalition. It was really just an excuse.
And that was the old Tubular Times?
Yeah, it was an excuse for me to put something on a newsletter. You know, I wanted to put a name on a newsletter, basically. So that was how it started in 1990.
Like four pages,
yeah. Photocopied, thanks to a donation from Fort Mason, which is a local nonprofit center here. Anyway. So yeah, so that's that story. It was a good way to start.
So that was the beginning of the Bike Coalition for as we know it now.
The current version.
Yeah, just want to check the mic there. Okay, we are recording. And so, how many people were involved at that time besides you and what was it, Daryl?
There were probably dozens, honestly.
So you had a membership, and they were like a paid membership, dues paying membership.
We instituted that. Actually, it was Joel and Peter Meitzler, who started that. I think it's the third issue of the newsletter in 91, getting people to pay some dues to help pay for the cost of the newsletter at that time. We didn't know what we were doing, you know. We were just making it up as we went along.
And then when did it pick up and become the professional, well-oiled bike coalition that we know?
We probably were not like officially incorporated until as late as 95, I think.
Really, 95? That was about the year I joined.
Yeah, yeah. I think we were, what's known as an association, a sort of unincorporated association until then. But we made money in the meantime. You know, we still took donations, and we had a fiscal sponsor for grants, and people gave us donations, and we spent it to publish the newsletter and whatnot. When I left 3 years ago, it had 4,500 members, and nowadays it has like 5,300 members.
5,300, yeah.
Yeah. So,
but when back in the went at the 95, it had maybe about what, 1,000, that many.
If that many.
Yeah. Yeah. What made it really take off? It seemed like there was a point where all of a sudden the Bike Coalition was in the news and they were a powerful.
Critical mass helped.
Yeah.
A lot. It still would have taken off without critical mass, though. I think it's just kind of obvious, and since this is a national podcast, I think it's important to note that in any city where you have any amount of bicycling for transportation already, you can make a bike coalition happen. It's an interesting phenomenon. I think you get a lot of pretty privileged people in San Francisco, especially. In San Francisco, it's got to be easier than practically anywhere in the world. You get these like white male you know, corporate executives and computer professionals and all these people who are used to such privilege in their lives. You know, the obstacles just fall away for them. And then they get on their bicycle and they're treated like scum. They're treated like they don't yep. belong. They're pushed into the curb. They're made to you know, get splashed on and abused and disrespected. And these people say, "What the fuck?" You know, they are really easy to organize because they get angry. People are used to privilege in their lives,
and they
get angry like, when they realize when they get treated like scum on the streets, when they get on their bicycle, and they say, "This is the only place in my life when I'm treated like scum, and I won't accept it." And it's really easy to say, "Well, we have the solution for you. Join our organization. You know, you and 1,000 of your friends feel the same way, and we're gonna change things in this town." So it's kind of easy, honestly, to tap into that frustration that people feel, because it's just unconscionable how bicyclists are treated, you know, in American cities.
It's improved here, and I credit both Critical Mass and the Bike Coalition, sort of the IRA and the Sinn Féin ends of the revolution. I credit that for changing, because I remember how it used to be. People would throw things at you if you took the lane. It's changed, hasn't it? It really isn't like that anymore.
I know.
And I'm sure it's still pretty bad in other parts of the country where
these days I travel around a lot, and it is like that a lot. In Georgia, I heard this story where this this bicyclist got hit, and two of them actually got hit in a straight through lane next to a right turn lane by a car that was going straight through and just ran over these two bicyclists. And the cops came and gave the bicyclists tickets.
Yeah, I remember how that used to be here, too.
You know, for doing exactly the right thing. So, and what I tell people is what's the secret to having a change is just getting more bicyclists out there. Like, I think that's why it's changed in San Francisco, because there's just so many more of us out there that at the water cooler, at kids' soccer games, at parties, at churches, like wherever, you run into someone who tells a story about being a bicyclist, and many San Franciscans now know people who ride bikes, so they're no longer an abstract obstacle, but a real human being,
which is how I imagine it must be in places like Holland.
You have
older people and people of all different classes all riding, and everybody sort of understands what it's like to be behind the handlebars. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, what do you think caused all these people to appear on the streets? It wasn't just the Bike Coalition. The Bike Coalition was a symptom of a resurgent bike culture, but I'm not quite sure what caused it. It seems like it's happening in other cities now, too. So.
I think it is definitely partly due to the Bike Coalition, though. The improvements on the streets have made a big difference. I mean, there are other factors that have nothing to do with the improvements on the streets, like an increase in population, and you know, a greater relative difficulty in driving and parking your car. You know, the decline of the bus system a little bit. You know, those factors have helped to increase bicycling. But I think that honestly, the new lanes that we've gotten around the city, the you know, 30 to 50 some miles of new lanes, and
especially Valencia Street. Valencia Street alone, because we actually reclaimed space from the cars. We took away a lane in each direction. It was a four-lane street, became a two-car lane street, and a
called a road diet. One of the premier road diets in the country. They're doing that all over the country now, basically.
Yeah,
taking four-lane streets and turning them into three-lane streets with a bike lane in each direction.
I hope to see more of that in San Francisco as time goes on.
I think it's honestly more and more bike lanes get more and more people out there, and that's why we've seen more bikes. And we've actually, San Francisco, of any county in the state, has had the highest increase in bicycling, double from 1990 to 2000, according to the census, which is kind of bad data to try to figure out how many people you have who ride a bike, but it's good data for decade-to-decade comparisons. Mm-hmm. So we can reliably say that doubled from 1990 to 2000. So, it's pretty exciting.
So, yeah, well, during that period of time from 1995 until now, I remember in 95 riding around town pretty much feeling alone. And I sort of had this dialogue in my head, you know, what I would say if I ever could get in front of a bunch of people in the government or in the Department of Parking and Traffic. And it would just sort of be this monologue to myself. I never really had anybody to share it with. And I don't know if it was Critical Mass or the Bike Coalition or just a convergence of various things, but all of a sudden there's a community and a real bike culture now.
And you got to get up in front of the board and say stuff, didn't you? I mean,
yeah,
there
still
were many hearings
where
you had the chance to finally say your piece, you know, and know they were going to listen.
And I would get applause afterwards. And that always surprised me. But then, okay.
You were always like one of our favorite spokespeople because you had children.
Oh, yeah. And I would use them shamelessly.
Yeah.
I still do. So then a couple years ago, you left the bike. You were the executive director for, what, five, 6 years, seven
11
years?
91 to 2002.
Yeah, good long time. So you brought it. You sort of matured the Bike Coalition, and then
sort of. Yeah, I didn't want to mature it as much as it needed to be matured. So I left in 2002, and now Leah Shaham is maturing it even more.
Yeah. And what are you doing? What are you doing now?
I am the president of the board of Transportation for a Livable City, which is a broad transportation reform organization focused on creating complete neighborhoods with complete streets for walking, bicycling, transit, mixed uses, so that your childcare and laundry and food is all within walking distance of your house. You know, trying to really make it possible and elegant to live without a car in San Francisco. That's TLC's Livable Cities project, and then.
So those of you who are regular bikescapers, you might want to refer back a couple of episodes to the interview with Tom Radulovich. What's his role over at TLC?
He's the executive director of TLC. I was the executive director for 2 years, and then I quit that job. Now Tom took over for me there. The other job that I'm doing is for the Thunderhead Alliance, the national coalition of state and local bicycle and pedestrian advocacy organizations.
That's a mouthful. So that's like the whole, that's a national organization.
It's
a coalition of coalitions.
Yeah, basically it's the leaders of those groups got together and realized, hey, we need to do several things. We need to share best practices so that when one of us hits on a really good idea, the rest of us can just copy it. Mm-hmm. We need to unite for a national agenda. So that we all agree on what our national agenda is, and we can bring our troops, our local troops, in all of our cities, 119 different member organizations now around the country, so that we can speak with a unified voice and get important federal legislation passed. And we need to create new organizations where they don't exist. We know the formula now for creating a bicycle organization. You know, if knowing what I know now, if San Francisco didn't have one, you know, it took us 14 years to get up to 4,500 members. It should take only four, in a city like San Francisco now, because, we know how to do it. There's simple formulas, and so my job is to go into places where they have the potential to have a powerful bicycle or pedestrian organization, and help them realize that potential more quickly than if they didn't have help.
Most big cities have something. Chicago pretty big Chicagoland Bicycle Federation. In New York, they have transportation alternatives. And what about places like Atlanta?
Atlanta has the Atlanta Bicycle Campaign. They're doing
New Orleans
pretty well. New Orleans has a very new group, and they were new before the hurricane. So one of the things I get to do is go down there and help them out. So that'll be.
Yeah, I wonder how the hurricane is going to. I noticed that I couldn't help thinking, well, I don't know how good a bicycle would have been in a flood, but I know that the cars weren't working too well.
Well, you know what's terrible is that the right wing is using the hurricane response in the opposite way that the left is, by saying see, government doesn't work to save you. Everyone needs to have a car. If everyone had a car in New Orleans, you know, the privatized transportation system
that is the
dream, you know, the wet dream of the right wingers, you know, that people could have gotten out, not realizing that that's an absurd cost to impose upon people, and that it didn't work in Houston when everyone tried to leave on the freeways in their cars either, did it?
Right.
So, you know, but they're using it, and the bike organization there isn't strong enough, you know, to get any headlines or any articles in the paper about how, you know, people could have evacuated if they had bikes. Right, if everyone had bikes and it were a common way of getting around in New Orleans, people could have gotten out of the town. And you know, in San Francisco, that's something that we have the capacity to do. You know, we have the reputations with the media. We have the capacity to send out those press releases, to do a quick report, and to make that point. In New Orleans, they don't have that capacity because their group just isn't that strong yet.
So Thunderhead is there for them to...
Exactly. Yeah. Our job is to help them be that strong, help them realize, you know, what their potential is.
How old is Thunderhead?
Founded in 96.
Okay, so it's
10 years old.
It's sort of happening. So,
yeah, but I mean, it was.
Where's it based? Is it Washington, D.C.?
It's based in Prescott, Arizona.
Oh, really?
San Francisco, California, and Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Because our executive director lives in Prescott. I live in San Francisco. Our director of member resources lives in Pittsburgh. So it's really based where the staff are, and we work nationally and work out of our home offices, you know, around the country. So.
You're well funded and
no, we're not well funded at all. Unfortunately, we could use about to double our budget. Right now, we have just the three of us. We have the 50/50 project that seeks to create strong bicycle and pedestrian organizations in all 50 states and the 50 largest metropolitan areas in the country. And at our current level of funding, that's a 10-year project. And that's not where we need to be going as a country. We need to get strong organizations in the top 50 metropolitan areas next week.
Right.
You know, so
it is kind of urgent, isn't it? With peak oil and
And you know, John, about the power of local organizing. I mean, all politics is local, and there's, you know, a federal policy saying that you should have bike lanes isn't going to mean jack if the entire city council in Kansas City thinks it's crazy. You know, they're not going to put bike lanes in. They're not going to need to, unless there's a local group in Kansas City that represents the people there who would like to ride the bikes, but they can't because the streets are dangerous, demanding it. You know, then that's how you have it. So, but that work of getting local advocates strong throughout the country is a lot of hard work. You know, it's what I'd love to have. I'd love to have seed money so that we can go in and hire executive directors with say $20,000. Go into Kansas City and say, "Here's $20,000. Identify a half a dozen leaders who can serve as a board of directors. You say, "Here's $20,000. You guys raise another $20,000. That's $40,000. That's enough for, you know, the first half a year or longer of a strong organization, and we can help you once, you know, once you've gotten this head start. We can help you keep it going."
Right.
Like, that's, you know, once you get a start, once you get the structures in place, the staff, you know, you can keep it going on your own. Now, we don't have that kind of money right now. It'd be great to have that kind of money. It'd be huge. You know?
I don't have to call Mr. Soros.
Yeah.
What other projects are... That's enough of a project, isn't it? That's basically the aim of the Thunderhead Alliance right now is to...
Yeah, to repeat it, it's to strengthen the existing organizations, to unite them for a common national agenda, and to create new ones where they are most needed. That's our mission statement, basically.
What do you see for the future here in San Francisco?
I think the short-term future is really exciting, actually. Yeah.
Right now we're trying to get a rapid bus transit
up and down Van Ness Avenue, and we're going to bring into some opposition from the grocers and the merchants on that street.
Yeah, but I don't think that opposition will prevail this time around. It prevailed last time around. I don't think it will prevail this time around.
I think the newspapers will get behind and all.
I mean, if we don't do bus rapid transit, we cannot continue to afford to operate the current transit system that we have. So it's really a matter of, are we going to pay $2 and $3 fares above our current $1.50 for worse transit service, or are we going to change the way we provide transit service to make it more efficient and to attract more passengers? That's really the choice. And San Franciscans will make the right choice in that regard. And I think we have smart enough people now in our advocacy groups and in government positions of leadership here in the city to make that case to the voters and to the people pretty clearly. You know, the merchants are talking about putting it on the ballot, whether they win Gary BRT. I hope they do, because they'll lose.
On Gary Street, yeah, Great Boulevard. Yeah. And what about future of bicycling in this town?
Well, it's not going nearly fast enough for my preference. But
yeah, I thought we'd have five Valencia streets by now in San Francisco. I thought we would be removing lanes left and right by now, especially with the success of Valencia. There was a little bit of friction from storekeepers when we brought in Valencia. Most people were actually surprisingly behind it. But,
and it's been a wild success.
It's been really good for business. I'm kind of actually worried that when the first Starbucks is going to move in, but it could happen soon. But,
I hope not. Yeah. We're in a wonderful coffee shop right now that's nothing like Starbucks.
Yeah, and it'll still be here even if a Starbucks didn't move in. All right.
It's Cafe La Onda. A little bit of Colombian flavor.
Yeah, if you're ever in San Francisco, check out Cafe La Onda. They have Dave's drinking coffee, he's going up, and I'm going down. I'm having beer.
And I gotta come right back down though, John. You're
gonna. All right.
Give me an Anchor Steam.
I will.
San Francisco local brew here shortly. Are you pausing?
I'm gonna end this interview.
Oh, all right.
Unless you have something else to say.
No, that's fine. That's good.
All right. Well, thanks. Let's see how it came out.
Department of Parking and Traffic.
Hello. I'd like to learn how to make a pass at the biker.
This is the DPT. We give information on passing bikers. Is that what you're looking for?
Yes, yes. Tell me, do the pretty biking girls like to be wooed? Like this, your eyes are so blue, like the veins of the fragrant blue cheeses.
Oh, no. We do have tips about cars and bikers sharing the road. I think you're confusing passing.
And the pretty biking girls, they're seduced by the art of mime, yes? Ooh, look here. I'm stuck in this small box.
Road etiquette is easily misunderstood, so here's some basics. As a cyclist, you have the right to ride 3 to 4 feet from parked cars. And as a motorist, when there's no designated bike lane, respect the rights of bikers in your lane. Take a look, carefully change lanes, and then pass.
And you, my petite, perhaps after the working, we go to my flat to enjoy Cabernet and some Jerry Lewis cinema? Hello? Hello?
Learn more online at bicycle.sfgov.org or sfbike.org or call 585-BIKE. Brought to you by the DPT and the San Francisco Bike Coalition, reminding bikers and motorists to coexist.
Ah, well, there's a little spot, a little radio PSA that was put out, public service announcement that was put out by the SFBC and the Department of Parking and Traffic, the aptly named Department of Parking and Traffic. They went and changed their name to the MTA, Metropolitan Transportation Authority, which is a little more fitting to what we hope they'll become. Although I think the original name was probably more fitting and had more to do with parking and traffic than actual transportation in the old days. So that was Snyder, Dave Snyder. Great guy. Nice to sit around and have we hung out for another hour out there in the coffee house after I turned off the MP3 player. So it's a great guy. We had a good time. And what else? Let's see. What part of the show are we into now? Well, letters. I've been getting some letters lately, and it's, you know, I keep thinking I'm going to share letters with you, but I don't. So this time I'm going to. Steve Gibson wrote an email in to me. He said, I wanted to let you know what a good podcast you have. I never hear anything bad about my podcast, except for technical stuff, which is, I guess that's what happens when you have a handpicked audience. And he says he looks forward to every new episode, and he said he liked the Market Street video. He wanted to know if I could do a video of present-day Market Street and show how it is today. Well, one thing I don't have a video camera, and I'm not planning on getting one anytime soon. And I think Bikescape is basically a radio show, a podcast. It's just where I'm coming from. But I will, if I ever get videos that I can think of a way to use it, that option is available, and it can be done. And besides, I wrote back to Steve, such a video has been made already, and it's not available online as yet. I'm looking forward to when it is. Maybe it will be. And I sent an email to the producers to see if I could get a link to it or something like that. I don't know what the deal is. They haven't gotten back to me yet. But what happened was there was a 100-year anniversary. We're talking about the video I posted a while back of Market Street in 1905, and that was 100 years ago, this trip down Market Street. And now there's a new movie that came out in the year 2005. Of the same trip, basically. They actually shot the movie twice, once with an old-fashioned vintage camera, the same camera same type of camera that was used for the original movie, and then also with high-resolution, high-definition video, widescreen, you know, the top of the line. So they made a video of just the way it is nowadays, and it's pretty interesting to see the differences. Some things change and some things don't, and perhaps, you know, they did show it out in the park recently at the end of Market Street over by where Critical Mass starts, and they showed it on both a high definition version, and they had an old arc lamp projector to show it, and that was pretty cool. And everybody sang San Francisco, Open Your Golden Gates before the movie started, which was also pretty cool. So that's one letter. What else did I want to find out about? That was the main one. Going back in Gmail here. Well, anyway, broken links, things like that. Anytime you see a broken link, Scott sent me an email about that. I fixed it right away. That's an email for today. Oh, and howdy to Lester out in the Midlands of England. Nice to hear from you. I guess a lot of people are coming in through the bike show. He's put a link on his blog to Bikescape. The bike show, of course, is a really great radio show out of from Resonance FM, which is an independent radio station in London, England, and they have this excellent show about bicycles. I've said before, he's a kindred spirit. he's like the English version of Bikescape, only much more polished and got that English flavor, which is nice to hear. Other podcasts. Well, there's one right there. The bike show. I've been meaning to promote this one bike show called Gear Noise. He sent me an email. I'm not even sure if I sent it back, if I replied to it. I think I did. But Gear Noise is a great show out of Los Angeles. And he basically talks about mountain biking. But he has some good interviews. He has a long interview with the Crank Brothers and the guys that make those cool pedals, the egg beater pedals and various tools and things. They're just interesting guys, and they're engineers, and they're kind of visionary about the way they design bike stuff. So listen to Gear Noise if you get a chance. And also, of course, out of Davis, California, there's the Bike Talk Radio, and they're also on a K-Dirt Radio, K-D-R-T, in Davis, but they're also podcasting, and they do some good shows, some excellent shows. They actually rebroadcast one of these shows once, and so listen to all these shows. And I was going to ask, you know, I haven't been heavily into promoting Bikescape, mainly because I'm just happy with the way things are going. But it would be nice if, like Bike Talk Radio, Bikescape was featured on iTunes, and I'm not quite sure how to make that happen. But I noticed that there's a review. You can click to leave a review of a podcast. So if anybody feels inclined, leave a review. You know, I don't care if you say bad things or good things about Bikescape, but as long as they're well-reasoned and thought out and from the heart, it would be great to hear what you have to say, and also maybe it would help push things along a little bit. It doesn't hurt to keep the ball rolling. Okay, now next, let's open up some windows on the computer and see what's happening. Well, first in New York. I'd like to look at the Time's Up calendar for that stuff. Let's see, January, today's the 8th, so this probably won't get uploaded till tomorrow, but there are bike repair workshops on the 10th at 6:30 p.m. on 49 East Houston between Mott and Mulberry. That's the Time's Up space. They are doing a workshop. They teach you how to fix your bike. That's a great thing. There's another one on the 12th at 6:30 at the same place, 49 East Houston, between Mott and Mulberry. The 13th is the Brooklyn Critical Mass. And if you're sick of being hassled by the cops in Manhattan, you can always go on the Brooklyn Critical Mass. It's a lot of fun, and it's easy, mellow, legal. You can bring your kids. It's totally nice. So that's an alternative to the raucous, crazy Manhattan Mass, which I think you should also go to if you feel so inclined. But bring the family to Brooklyn. On the 14th, they have Prospect Park. They have the Prospect Park Moonlight Ride. That's at 9 p.m. They meet at Grand Army Plaza at the northern entrance to Prospect Park, where Flatbush Avenue, Eastern Parkway, Union Square, and Prospect Park West all intersect there. So that's where you should go for that. And on the 21st, moving up ahead there, they have a Sunday volunteer work party. Time's Up needs all the volunteers they can get. You know, stuffing envelopes, whatever it is they've got for you to do. It should be a nice social occasion. Bring some beer, whatever you like to bring. And there, that starts at 2 p.m. at the Time's Up space, 49 East Houston. And on the 21st, what is that, a Sunday? Yeah, the Bike Lane Liberation Day. 2 p.m., meet at Washington Square Park near the Arch. And you can try and liberate double-parked cars and get all self-righteous about the bike lanes and reclaim them for the bikes in New York. That's enough for New York. Let's see what we've got here in San Francisco. The chain of events. The Bike Coalition also has, the San Francisco Bicycle Coalition also has a volunteer night. It's almost every Wednesday. The January 25th and the 11th. Wednesdays at the 5 p.m. at the SFBC headquarters, 995 Market Street, up on the 15th floor, a market in 6th Street. Good place to go to meet people. I actually know people who have gotten married who've met at this volunteer night, so it's quite a social occasion. It's a lot of fun, especially if you're new to town, you want to plug in and do something good for the Bike Coalition. They have a SFBC board meeting coming up. They don't have open meetings anymore because the Bike Coalition is just too big. They used to have big community meetings, and it's just too big now. But the board meetings are open to the public, and everyone's invited. It's Tuesday, January 17th at 6:30 p.m. at the SFBC headquarters, also 995 Market Street. If you want to have questions or anything, you can contact Leah Shaham at 431-BIKE. Extension 306, or you can email Leah at sfbike.org. And the Cesar Chavez Boulevard Bike Lane campaign is underway. They're having a committee meeting Tuesday, January 17th at 6:30 p.m. at the Bernal Gateway Apartments at 3101 Mission Street at Cesar Chavez. So the campaign to calm Cesar Chavez is still well underway, it says here, and the neighborhood outreach has begun. That takes a lot of volunteer footwork. So if you're not ready, this is a perfect time to get involved, if you're not already. The next Si Se Puede committee, that's what they call it, the Si Se Puede committee meeting will be on Tuesday at 1:17 at 6:30 at the Bernal Gateway Apartments. If you have questions, you want to contact Fran Taylor, ftaylor@cmp.com. Anything else? We're winding down here. Let me just see if there's anything important. Street Skills, Bike Ed, Bicycle Education, Day 1. This is a free service from the SFBC. 3 4-hour in-classroom courses teach the basics of safe and enjoyable cycling, including riding in traffic, necessary equipment, crash avoidance, legal rights and responsibilities. Open to adults 14 and over, and a bicycle is not required. Note, this is day one course for the League of American Bicyclists Bike Ed Road Certification. So each class is free, but you must register, and you can visit their Bike Ed page to sign up. Look on the blog to find out where it is, but I'll tell you. Oh, it's sfbike.org/?edu. So that's that. All this stuff will be eventually, maybe not right away, on the blog, bikescape.blogspot.com, where you can find all the previous shows and Oh, one of those emails that came in recently, the guy wanted to know why I don't put my URL in that little box that opens up little what he called the show notes on iTunes. And the reason I do that is because what iTunes does is they just slurp up whatever the first few lines of whatever is on the blog, and it wouldn't make sense to do that, but to put the URL in the blog. But you can also get to the URL by just clicking on the little arrow there in iTunes, right next to the name of the where it says Bikescape. Move along to the right, and there's a little arrow, and if you click on it, it takes you to the website, or it takes you to the main Bikescape spot in the iTunes store, where you can click on a link and go to bikescape.blogspot.com. Okay, and so that's cleared up, and here we are moving into 45 minutes, so I think it's time to say goodbye. I have a song here by Cake. These songs were all donated by Dave Snyder. The first song, I don't know who did it, but I'll find out for you, but look on the blog. And this song is by Cake, Long Line of Cars.
There's a long line of cars and they're trying to get through. There's no single explanation, there's no central destination. But this long line of cars is trying to get through. And this long line of cars is all because of you. We don't wonder where we're going or remember where we've been. This traffic flowing and accept a little sin. So this long line of cars will never have an end. And this long line of cars keeps coming around the bend. Of Sacramento to the freeways of LA. We've got to keep this fire burning and accept a little break. So this long line of cars is trying to break free. And this long because of me, there's a long